sir.
Good morning, may it please the court, I'm Scott Fitzgerald, I'm with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the employing agency, Northern Virginia Training Center. I would reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal if I may.
Yes, sir.
This is an appeal from a decision of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission on the issue of permanency benefits. The Workers' Compensation Act provides for permanency benefits. Section 65.2-503 allows it's essentially a chart of ratable body parts. One of those body parts is the arm, not the shoulder, and that's the gist of the dispute here before the court. The facts of this case were that Ms. Adamako suffered a shoulder injury, and only a shoulder injury. All of her treatment was to the shoulder. She testified to pain only in her shoulder. Even the IME report that is the basis for the rating, although it says at the very top of it here for pain in shoulder and arm, in the recitation of her symptoms only mentions shoulder pain.
But in this case, wasn't there a report from one of the treating physicians who said that he really meant to rate the arm because it affected the arm, and so we have a fact finding?
He did, and my response to that is he has the facts found by the commission have to be based on credible evidence. The only evidence in this case limits all of her symptomatology to the shoulder and nothing below the shoulder. The only mention of the arm is a lifting restriction because of the shoulder. So when the doctor, it was Dr. Salter, did his report, he did range of motion studies, all of which were only as to the shoulder. There's no credible factual evidence of any impairment to the arm, and essentially this was conceded by the two commissioners in their majority opinion, because what the commission got involved in was this theoretical debate as to whether the shoulder or the arm or the upper extremity is what is rateable. I think that the commission is charged with determining the percentage of impairment pursuant to the statute. The AMA guidelines are a resource for the commission to use as they acknowledge they are not bound by them, and they can reject them completely if they choose to do so.
But your position then is that the it was a shoulder injury. Shoulders are not rateable under the statute, and even if it has some effect limiting the range of motion for the arm, it still is not a rateable injury.
Correct. In this case, the impact on the arm is incidental, and that minor incidental impacts on other members are not independently rateable. This case might be different had the shoulder injury resulted in nerve damage that maybe had numbness in the arm, tingling in the arm, loss of grip strength, something like that, that was a real impact to something below the shoulder, but you don't have that here. The General Assembly has provided for many body parts, arms, legs, and uses the word arm. It did not include, for example, the hip, the knee. There's a case actually where someone lost a kidney, they said you can't get permanency benefits for that. Benefits are limited to what the statute allows.
Counsel, aren't we though, if we were to accept your view of the case, essentially substituting our view factually as to what the assessment of the medical evidence in the case was?
No, because I think the medical evidence is only related to the shoulder. And then the doctor takes a shoulder rating because of the AMA guides and says, I have to go with what the shoulder tells me in the chart and then make that into an arm rating.
But didn't Dr. Salter talk about the arm?
No. In a checkbox letter, he said, I intended to rate the arm, not the shoulder. But in terms of any factual basis of any actual impairment to the arm, there's no evidence of that. In his report, he only mentions pain around the shoulder, nothing below the shoulder. So it's analogous to, for example, if I break my pinky, well, the pinky's part of my arm, but I don't get an arm rating because there's nothing upstream.
Your pinky's part of your hand.
Well, it is part of your hand, but to the extent that.
But wouldn't you be entitled to a hand rating if your pinky, you know, it's like five interrelated digits that form the function of an appropriately functioning hand?
No, there's a line of cases that involve state troopers who had pinky injuries. They have loss of grip strength as a result of that, but their PPD rating has been limited to the pinky and not to the hand, because the hand was not injured. It's an incidental effect on the hand.
Now, you say that Dr. Salter didn't say anything about the arm. I'm looking at use of figures 1640, 1643, and 1646, where he identifies the claimant's chief complaint as a right shoulder and arm pain, and notes her right arm restrictions.
You're looking at page one of his independent medical evaluation. He notes at the top, chief complaint, right shoulder and arm pain.
Mm-hmm.
But then down in his history that he took from her, he says the examinee complains of present weakness in her right shoulder. And she has intermittent pain about the right shoulder, sometimes worse than others. So there was nothing in his examination that indicates that she actually was suffering from any arm pain. And when she testified at the hearing, she only mentioned pain in her shoulder. She did not mention any pain in her arm.
And you, I'm taking that it is not your position that the claimant never brought any attention to the pain in her arm. You're not taking that position.
Well, I'm not aware that she did. He has that at the beginning of his report. I don't know where that came from, because it's not reflected in the history that he subsequently took from her later on in the report. The only indication of the arm, there's that one mention of pain in his recitation of why she's here, but no basis for that factually. And then there's evidence that the shoulder problems affected her ability to lift, but not independently in the arm, that the lifting was because of the shoulder problem. And I think what you have here is, someone asked me, is Pluto a planet? And I said, you can debate whether Pluto is a planet or a planetoid or whatever it is. Relevant to this case, should there be permanency benefits for the arm or for the upper extremity? The General Assembly has said the PPD benefits related are limited and relate only to the arm. Now, the two commissioners in the majority opinion took the position that the AMA guidelines don't allow us to rate the arm. They provide for the shoulder, therefore we have to rate the shoulder and make it into an arm rating. But that essentially allows them to expand the statute. The General Assembly could have allowed for a shoulder rating. They didn't. The fact that the AMA guidelines, which are only a resource or a tool for the commission to use in coming up with whatever its rating is, shouldn't be allowed to expand the statute beyond what the General Assembly has said that.
There are cases that say if the injury manifests itself in the loss of the use of a rateable member, it is compensable. There are cases that say that.
Correct. And that's why I said this case might be different had she had some manifestation in her arm. And so the cases that you're thinking of, the classic case is a back injury. The back injury is not rateable, but to the extent that the back injury causes nerve damage that now causes pain in the legs, causes tingling in the legs, causes some other loss of use of the leg itself, independent of the back injury, that is rateable. My position is that's not this case. That could have been this case, but that's not this case, because there's no independent impairment of the arm that's not derivative 100% from the shoulder. There's no evidence that, there's no factual evidence of pain below the shoulder. The doctor mentions that in his report, but she did not testify to that in here. There's no evidence of any other impairment below the shoulder joint. And that's why, again, had this case had some different facts, I don't think I'd be here. And it does maybe seem like there's a fine line.
How does the commission's weighing and assessment of the factual circumstances and the medical evidence affect what we need to do in this case?
I think it goes back to credible evidence supporting the commission's decision. This is no different, I think, than if the commission had said, if the doctor had said, Everything I did was her to her right arm. I'm giving her a 25% rating to her left leg. And the commission said, and the commission affirmed that for some reason. That doesn't make it a factual finding based on anything.
It makes the factual finding incredible that we could actually disturb on appeal.
Correct.
Why isn't the letter from the doctor, Appendix 37, credible evidence where he's checked it's an arm rating at 34%?
Because it goes back to what's the basis for that opinion. And the fact that there's nothing to support it, no fact to support it, to my mind makes it no different than if the doctor had just said left leg instead of right arm. If there's no basis for any impairment of the left leg, just because the doctor says it's the left leg doesn't make it so.
So you're asking us to make the determination that the doctor's checking arm is incredible because it's not based on fact.
Correct. That's essentially what it boils down to, is just because the doctor says it, there has to be something underlying it, and there isn't anything here. There could be, and I'd submit that in 99% of the cases, you would have something there, but this case, just as the total absence of anything below the shoulder, makes that doctor's check mark there unsupported by any fact.
I assume that you were trial counsel, correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. Did you have an opportunity at trial to discount or discredit the doctor's checking of the arm as part of the relevant evidence to be considered in this case?
They came in very close in time to the hearing. I suppose we could have continued the hearing to depose the doctor. I took the attitude that we'll see what she testifies to, and she testified only to pain in the shoulder, that it was exactly where we are now. As the evidence went in before the deputy commissioner, it was insufficient to support a finding that she had an impairment to the arm, because, again, it just boils down, just because he says it, it has to be based on something. There has to be some.
Were there any questions or examination of the doctor regarding why, based upon your review of the facts, this box was checked when there was no evidence whatsoever to support it?
No, there was no. The way the commission works, the doctors don't show up and testify. Their medical records come in under a hearsay exception, so it was just the records that came in to the hearing, the only person to testify.
But you hadn't deposed the doctor or anything like that in it?
That's correct, we did not.
Okay.
And so, just in summary here, from my standpoint, all the evidence, and including the testimony from the claimant, points to the shoulder. Even the lifting restriction that she has is because of the shoulder. What the commission did was to expand the scope of the statute and to say that the arm is rateable, but because the AMA guideline makes us look at the shoulder to rate the arm, we're going to therefore expand it and include shoulders to the extent that the AMA guideline allows us to do that.
The way that I understand the reason why that is done, and obviously you know a whole lot more about workers' comp law than I do, but as I understand it, the reason why is because of the concept of judicial economy. In other words, if we've got some interconnected body parts that are subject to inquiry and there's a full opportunity for the litigants to question and contest whether or not there's an injury to that particular body part, as long as it's part of the record, it's appropriate for the commission to consider it if they are interrelated. That's the way I understand the law.
I think it's the hearsay exception clearly is for judicial economy, so that you're not bringing doctors in all day long to come to commission hearings. The claimant still has the burden of proof, and in this case, it was our position that the claimant had not met that because there was no basis for that finding that the arm was rated. But it is true that the commission, I think wisely, recognized they're not doctors either, so what you have is you often will have. Well, in this case, you could have had, for example, competing ratings, and this doctor saying 34%, another doctor saying 10%. What the commission will do oftentimes is average them or weigh them and maybe not average.
Or defer to the treating physician as opposed to the IME doctor or whatever they want to do.
Right. They'll average and maybe skew one way or the other, or they might reject one completely. Again, sometimes you make a tactical decision to not get an IME. And I don't recall whether we made that in this case, but we certainly might have decided not to do an IME because we just thought the evidence was insufficient.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We'll save the rest of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, David Falcon for the appellee, Cecilia Hatamako. I want to pick up on what Mr. Fitzgerald was saying about the response to the claimant's evidence and also corollary as to what Judge Alston was saying. There was an opportunity that the employer had in this case to rebut, impeach, or otherwise cross-examine the rating. They did not do so. At the evidentiary hearing level, at the commission level, and now in the Court of Appeals, what they're asking each level to do is to say that report that says she has a 34% impairment to her arm is not good enough. As Judge Huff pointed out, there is a report from the doctor signed assigning a 34% rating to the arm. Now, the court is not here to parse through the medical evidence and determine what was the basis of the doctor's opinion, whether the doctor's opinion was given sufficient weight. The court
but
is
as I, but as I understand your opponent colleague's argument, notwithstanding that a box was checked or the like, the bottom line is there has to be some evidence, credible evidence, in the record to support the claimant's particular claim for the impairment of the particular body part that she wants to be compensated for.
Correct. So let's look at the credible evidence that's in the record right now. The first would be the evaluation from Dr. Salter. And that evaluation clearly says at the top that it's for right shoulder and arm pain. Now, Judge Alston, as you pointed out, there are a lot of cases that say that an impairment to a non-rateable body part, an injury to a non-rateable body part that causes impairment in a rateable body part is compensable. That's Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority versus Rogers. That's what we have here. The claimant is not arguing that she has an impairment to the shoulder. She's arguing she has an impairment to the arm. There was never any rating to the shoulder or impairment of the shoulder submitted to the commission. If you take a look at the Dr. Salter's report, it doesn't indicate a body part in it at all. It actually just says 34%. So the claimant appears at the doctor's office with complaints of shoulder and arm pain. What other evidence is there? She testifies at the hearing that she has difficulty lifting anything over 10 pounds. All right, she's not saying that's because of my shoulder. She's lifting with the arm. That's not a reasonable inference. That's just common sense. The range of motion test that the doctor did on her, again, these are tests that are done to test the range of motion, flexion, extension, abduction of the entire arm, not just the shoulder. And then finally, I think one thing that we're omitting that we need to look at is the opinion of the treating physician. The doctor that had treated her originally for her injury restricted her to no more than 20 pounds lifting to the arm, and that record is in the evidence as well. So the position of the appellee is that there is no medical evidence to support the theory that the appellant is advancing, that the impairment is only restricted to the shoulder. All of the evidence in the record reflects that it's impairment to the arm, which makes this a sufficiency of the evidence case, and that's not what the court is designed to do. And again, if you take a look at the March 20th, 2012 report from Dr. Salter, what he's looking at is problems with the arm as a whole. There's no way to separate what's the shoulder from what's the arm. When there's a lifting restriction, then the use of the arm is impacted, and that's part of what this is designed to do. Also, the pain to the shoulder that the claimant complained about, testified to at the hearing, again, pertains to her inability to use the arm or impairment to the arm as a result of the original shoulder
injury. The focus of your opponent colleague's argument, I think, is best summed up by Commissioner Williams, and I'm going to read what he says and give you an opportunity to respond to what he says. Commissioner Williams summed up succinctly employer's argument in his dissenting opinion when he wrote, quote, the lack of any injury to the claimant's arm, the lack of any symptoms related to the arm, the lack of any testimony by the claimant that she has lost any function in her arm, the lack of any medical diagnosis relating to her arm, and the lack of any examination or measurement of the claimant's arm function is by Dr. Salter in formulating his impairment rating. In other words, saying that there is a dearth of evidence to support the theory of compensability that you are articulating. Where would you say that Commissioner Williams was wrong in his assessment of the evidence?
Okay, so the way that I would respond to that is, first, I would agree there was no injury to the claimant's arm other than the shoulder injury. With regard to symptoms, I would point to her testimony about the difficulty with the pain and how it affects her use of the arm, again, going back to the Rogers case. And that was testimony at the hearing. And I would also point out that this testimony was uncontradicted. Not only was there no competing medical report, but there wasn't any witness or there wasn't any rebuttal to the claimant being able to say, I can't lift more than 10 pounds comfortably because of this problem. And then Judge Williams also points out with regard to Dr. Salter's examination, and this I think is something that we need to look at, the tables that Dr. Salter uses are specifically tables that address what impact an injury to the shoulder has on the arm as a whole. If you look at the AMA guides, what he's looking at is how do I quantify this injury to the shoulder and how it impacts the use of the entire arm, and he relies on that, and I would say that that's credible evidence.
About the lack of any examination and the measurement of the claimant's arm, what would you say to that?
I can't dispute that. I think that what the doctor examined was what he examined. Certainly, he's testing her ability to move her arm, to lift it over her head, to bend it backwards, to bend it forwards. But I don't think that you can separate if the shoulder is impacting her ability to move her arm in that direction, then I think that's sufficient.
So would you suggest that when the claimant came in and said that she was having problems with her shoulder, she was basically misdiagnosing herself? Is that fair?
No, I think the claimant appeared at Dr. Salter's office, as the report indicates, with complaints of pain in her shoulder and her arm. And I think that what she is doing is she's explaining that she had an injury to the shoulder, which is impacting her ability to use the arm. When I do this, it hurts. When I do that, it hurts. I can't do this. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's sufficient in order for the doctor to assign an impairment rating to the arm. And that's precisely what he did.
Okay. Mr. Fjellgren, it's been too many years. I'm trying to remember how an IME is selected in a workers' comp context. Help me. You have a treating physician, Dr. Lane, and then Dr. Salter was the independent medical examination. Is there motion practice in the workers' comp area to select the IME, or is that something you just selected an independent and?
It varies from case to case, Judge. It generally, the practice is that the treating physician's opinion will be sought. If for whatever reason the treating physician cannot or will not provide an impairment rating, then an independent medical evaluation can be selected, and that's something that the claimant did in this case. She selected a doctor to provide an impairment rating.
She selected.
That's
it.
Correct.
It was not something that was selected by that went through the commission to appoint someone from.
No, Your Honor. It can be done like that, but that's not how it was done in this case.
All right, thank you.
So in summation, our position would be that this is a sufficiency of the evidence case. There is uncontradicted evidence from Dr. Salter, from Dr. Lane, and from the claimant herself that the injury to the shoulder created an impairment in the arm. And we would request that the Court of Appeals affirm the full commission.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you. I think that, again, it is sufficiency of the evidence, sort of, but I think it goes beyond that. It is credible evidence. This is not a sufficiency of the evidence case. It is whether there's any shred of evidence to support the finding that there was rateable disability of the arm. And I think one of the key points here is that on page 54 of the appendix in the full commission's decision, Commissioner Marshall basically said the way the AMA guides are written, the commission essentially must equate upper extremity to arm. And what he's saying is we have to look at the shoulder because the AMA guides require us to do so. And that is the thrust of the error, because the General Assembly said arm. And the General Assembly could have said upper extremity. They could have said shoulder. There are an awful lot of body parts that are not listed by the statute or by the General Assembly. And I think that's the fundamental theoretical problem here is, and I think you basically have two problems. You have one is a factual problem. There's no factual basis for any loss of use of the arm itself. It's all derivative from the shoulder. And there's nothing like tingling, pain in the arm, loss of any function of the arm itself. In fact, no measurement of that. The other part is the more theoretical is Pluto a planet sort of concept? What's rateable? Is it the arm? Is it the upper extremity? Does it include the shoulder? Does it not include the shoulder? And I think the answer to that is it cannot include the shoulder because the General Assembly didn't say so. It said the arm. And so for the full commission to say, well, to rate the arm, we've got to look at the whole upper extremity because that's all the AMA guideline has a chart for, is reversible error.
Thank you, Council.
Thank
the matter
you.
Submitted will come down to Greek.